sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
Second hour of the Memorial Day Best of Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com. Steve will be back in the Sunbury Motors Studio again tomorrow. Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, routes 11 and 15 for the Kia dealership in Hummel's Wharf. Today's Memorial Day Best of Steve Jones Show, sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. Find out what they can do for you by visiting them online as well at purdyinsurance.com. Well, back on the Hilshire's General Store hotline over the last couple of weeks, we had some great interviews that we're going to share with you, actually even the last couple of months too, that we'll share with you here in this hour of the program, including an interview with Rob Dibble.
From Compass Media Sports. For years, been an analyst with ESPN, with Fox, now with the Angels along the way as well, Rob Dibble. Rob, I grew up in Connecticut, so I listened to your father for years on WDRC and WTIC. Walt Dibble, one of the finest radio newscasters I've heard. And on that note, I just want to say welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I want to get into, first of all, you talk about obviously a variety of things on your particular show, but obviously people are going to remember you for talking about baseball. So I want to get your take so far on what you have seen through 1 month of the season, and do you draw any trends from an opening month?
No. If you know, we get another 25 games into the season, then, you know, if I'm a general manager, I start tweaking my team. Worried about, okay, if we're 10 games out of first place, why? Say like the Philadelphia Phillies right now, they're starting to have a little infighting, a little bickering, but they're only 5.5 games out. And there's no reason for guys to panic 27 games into the season. So, you know, you need to settle down that and look at how deep your bench is. The problem is, Steve, is that you've got 12 pitchers or 11 pitchers on almost every major league staff, which it shortens your bench, a lot of extra guys there. And later in games, those last nine outs, which are critical, there's just not that many great arms left in bullpens anymore. And so the game's changed to the point where starters are getting 18, 21 outs, relievers are getting worn out by mid-July. And so it's really, if you don't have a good minor league system or you don't have the wherewithal to go out and trade for big names once you get to the crunch time in the season, this early in the year, I'm not worried about that. Right now, I'm worried about trying to get my team healthy. Let's say the game I'm going to call tonight, the Angels and the Orioles. Angels are missing their ace starter in Jared Weaver and their best reliever in Ryan Madsen, who you saw for many years with the Phillies.
Right.
And so you look at those pieces, who's going to fill those spots for now? And that's why you see some teams struggling. The more, like, say, the Yankees get banged up, it's not showing right now. They're playing and they're exceeding, I think, expectations. But eventually, you know, those weaknesses in their lineup are going to be exposed.
You mentioned teams getting 18 or pitchers getting 18 to 21 outs and then turning it over to the bullpen. How big a difference as the season goes along that it's 18 and not 21?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. And, you know, you're even seeing it, you know, the Washington Nationals. The last couple of years, their formula, not just with Strasburg, with Gio Gonzalez and some of their other pitchers, you know, that wears down their bullpen. And last year, you know, you take Strasburg out of the equation, then you look at, you know, Clifford at the end and Storen at the end. They were dog-tired by September and into October. And really, if you don't go out there and make enough moves to cover the lack of the starting pitching and the fact that a lot of guys in blowout games don't need to pitch, you know, and they addressed that with Soriano this year, but you still got the same formula, and it's all around baseball, you know, and the teams that really do well, like the Giants, they go that extra inning, they get to 22, 24 outs more often than not, and the only reason I like the quality start stat, it just shows you how many times they've cut short guys' starts and said, okay, we're going to get the last nine out from the bullpen. So I'm going to go to like the fifth or the fourth best guy and take my really good starting pitcher out of the game. To me, it's one of the more ridiculous formulas in baseball, is turning it over to a guy that you're not paying. You know, you're paying starting pitchers $20 million
right
to go 18, 21 outs, and then you're going to, you know, bring in a guy who's making $500,000. You wouldn't do that in football. You wouldn't take out your starting quarterback and put in your third string quarterback or someone that's not comparable to finish games. But we do it in baseball all the time, and that's where you see the lack of success.
When you pitched, and I know obviously you came out of the pen, but do you remember? Do you recall the most pitches you threw in a game?
Well, I was a starter my first 2 years in the minor leagues.
Right.
So,
and then you transitioned over.
I would
over.
Throw 140, 150 in 7-8 innings. And that was normal back in the 80s and into the 90s.
Right.
And guys, I give you, for instance, I played against Fernando Valenzuela, and we used to chart his pitches. And he'd go complete games and throw 180 pitches. You know, so now throw in the, let's just say you threw five warm-ups in between innings. You threw your 50 warm-ups before the game. You're talking about 250 pitches every 5 days. And it didn't seem to bother anybody. And Leo Mazzoni did a great job that 14-year run where the Braves won their division because the pitchers threw every day. Let's say like Greg Maddux. Greg Maddux, not only was he economical, but the next day after his start, he's long tossing, he's getting the blood flowing through his arm, he's keeping his arm healthy and ready to throw his side day in 2 days. And then be ready 2 days after that. And it's just the constant throwing, which they don't do anymore. They're so protective. And I've coached high school baseball now in L.A. for the last 3 years. And, you know, the kids don't play catch anymore every day. They protect their arms. They shut it down all the time when they feel any kind of soreness. You know, we used to throw through that kind of soreness because that's normal. There's a difference between pain and injury. And I think everybody's so nervous because of so much money being poured into these athletes that they have no more endurance anymore. Back to the days of like the Bob Gibsons and Don Drysdales and guys that used to stay out there because you know why? Because they didn't want to turn it over to the bullpen. They wanted to win the game.
Right, and besides, you know, in my summer, you know, of course, in the fall, I have Penn State football and broadcast Penn State basketball, so broadcast the two of those. But in the summer, I'll do minor league baseball here. Now, it's the New York Penn League, and maybe if a guy hasn't pitched in a little bit because, for example, their college season ended at the end of May, and now here it is the middle of June, okay, I understand that. But too often I've seen 60 pitches shut it down, 50 pitches shut it down, and I don't quite get that.
Yeah, and what it's hard for me to figure out is the pitching coach's job is to look at the fatigue and when you're struggling with your mechanics. It's not so much your pitches. It's how you throw them. Are you repeating your delivery correctly? You know, there's a kid out here who's probably going to be one of the top 15 picks I coached for a couple of years named Phil Bickford.
Yep.
He did exactly what I did in high school, which is throw 95 to 98% fastball. Some two-seam, some four-seam. I didn't have a really good breaking ball until I was 22 years old, and my velocity increased. His velocity has increased from the time he was 15 to 17, throwing mostly fastballs, to around 88 to 97 now.
Wow.
And, you know, that's just because he's grown bigger and stronger, and he really hasn't hurt his arm and broken down his arm by throwing breaking balls and trying to turn over change-ups and things like that. And as a pitching coach, I used to just watch him, and when his mechanics started to fail, that's when you pull him out. And that means he needs to do some more running. He might need to do a little bit extra throwing in the pen. That's what the coaching staff's job is, to recognize when a guy is failing. We can break it down to football and Tim Tebow. You know, Tim Tebow's mechanics as a quarterback, if I were to say he was a pitcher, are horrible because they're inconsistent. And he flies open in the front, and so his arm's always trailing, and that's why he's inconsistent throwing completions. I think his career average is like 47%.
Yes.
If you were a pitcher in baseball and I threw 50% strikes, I would have never made it to the major league. So it just shows you have to be consistent with something, whether you're a hitter or a pitcher in baseball.
And that gets down to the Strasburg issue. And that, of course, you know, we know he shut him down last year and so forth. This year, you talk about repeating your delivery. When you watch him this year, he is falling off to first base, and I don't recall him ever falling off to first base before this year.
No, and, you know, Steve McCaddy is an excellent pitching coach, but I think you've gotten to the point where you're allowing Strasburg to work too much, especially with off-speed stuff and curveball. He throws 98 miles an hour.
Yeah.
He should be be able to, with his, and his command is impeccable, just, you know, dot the outside, dot the inside of the plate, and stop throwing so many changeups and curveballs. And they talk about pitching to contact, but pitching to contact is, I'm going to hit the outside portion of the plate with 95. He's going to hit a ground ball to the shortstop. That's visualization.
Right.
And like you said, if you repeat your delivery, and if you look at Greg Maddux, he was so smooth and comfortable that every pitch came out of the same arm slot. And I think one of the things is as time goes on, and now you have technology, and, I mean, you can watch his last start on my iPad, on your iPhone, and you can really, really pick up, okay, where is he dropping down on his changeup? Where's his fastball coming from? And hitters are smart enough to pick that up. And little nuances like that, if he's not repeating his delivery, you know, consistently on his off-speed stuff as much as his fastball, that's the difference. The hitters are laying off of those changeups and curveballs that are dropping out of the strike zone. Let's take a guy who's got really good mechanics this year, repeating his delivery, is Yu Darvish.
Yes.
With Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You can't pick up the ball from one pitch to another because it comes from the same arm location every time he delivers it. He's got very smooth mechanics. You know, a lot of the Asian pitchers have that little hitch. Guys, it's not the hitch that bothers them. It's that they hide the ball very well. And I think for Steven Strasburg moving forward, it's just, dude, throw 75-80% fastball. Let your defense help you. You know, don't work so hard. Greg Maddux, he'll be known for his career when he goes into the Hall of Fame. He averaged 77 pitches for every 9 innings he was out on the field. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's not only economical, it's you know, you're getting your team off the field. They can play defense better behind you. You know, you're getting your offense out there more, and you're making the other team work harder. So there's a lot more to it than just going out there and trying to strike out 10 guys every outing and get 18, 21 outs. There's a whole game within a game going on when you're out there on the mound.
Yeah, two parts. When you mentioned Leo Mazzoni, it's amazing how Maddux, Glavine, and Smoltz never had arm trouble. I don't recall them missing starts. And then number two, you talk about pitching to contact. You as a pitcher are trying to, yes, pitch to contact so that the contact is where you want it to be.
Right, exactly. And having a Hall of Fame shortstop, I always had amazing infielders, Mariano Duncan, Ron Oster,
right.
Jeff Branson. You know, I had Hal Morris over at first, even Nick Kosaski. Guys that would just, you know, it was very simple. Chris Sabo, he was a All-American goalie at Michigan. You know, when he was at third base, he was fearless. He would just knock the ball down. So my mistakes were always gobbled up. Eric Davis in center field. So in my mind, I knew, okay, if I get a guy on first, my next pitch is going to be either a slider away or a fastball away. So if that guy's trying to hit my fastball and pull it, he's going to either hit it to the second baseman or the shortstop. We have a possible double play ball. So I was always thinking like that instead of, you know, the strikeouts are going to come. Guys are going to make a lot of mistakes. When you fall behind in the count, that's when you want to just throw pitches that are in the zone. So the guys, because they'll get themselves out. The one thing growing up in Connecticut, I was always a good hitter. I was a good outfielder, shortstop. I wanted to hit. Hitters want to hit.
Yeah.
And so knowing that as a pitcher, that's an advantage to you. You got to use that against them.
Exactly. Now, the next part, you mentioned guys that old-time Gibson, Drysdale, Tiant, didn't matter. They wanted the ball. They wanted to eat up innings. They wanted to throw complete games. Roy Halladay has had that mentality. This now has been last year for the, you know, he went in the DL for the first time. This year he's been up and down. What have you seen in Halladay?
Well, his innings, if you see like a 5-year trend and pattern, a lot of it is he's done the same thing that Chris Carpenter did with the Cardinals, where you kind of hit a zone, a dead zone, so to speak, of, you know what, maybe his breaking balls aren't as sharp as they once were.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost 2-3 mile an hour in his fastball. And so that's kind of a mental edge to the hitters. They're saying, now this is the time we're going to get a little payback on Roy, and every mistake seems to be getting hit really hard right now. But it's he amassed so many innings, threw so many pitches, pitched deep into the year. So his recovery time, all those good postseason performances that he had and all those years with the Phillies that he was going deep into October, that's a couple extra weeks that he wasn't able to have his arm recovering. And then you're right back out there. I'll tell you what, the WBC, the getting guys, you know, earlier and earlier into spring training, I think that's caught up to him. guys that, because part of Roy Halladay's game has always been he's had amazing off-speed stuff.
Right.
Amazing changeups, amazing sinkers, amazing curveballs and sliders and cutters. Eventually, your body's going to say, you know what, we've come to the point where we don't have the same life that we once did. You know, time catches up to you. There's no way you can run from that. And so it's a question now. Even guys like Roger Clemens and Nolan Ryan, they reinvented themselves. You know, Roger came up with a forkball,
right,
with an amazing changeup and also a setup pitch. Guys are expecting 95 and they get like a floating 82, 85 mile an hour forkball. They don't know what to do with it. So usually they just let it go. Now you're ahead in the count. Now they don't know what's coming next, and that helps. So I think right now the hitters have the advantage on Roy, but I think he'll figure it out. I think it was Dave Righetti told me once. He's basically like, listen, out of 35 starts, 10 are going to be great, 10 are going to be awful, and then essentially 15 are going to be, you're going to go out there with maybe one pitch, and that's when you're a pitcher. That's when you have to go out there and figure it out that it might not be my fastball tonight that I have. Got to put that on the shelf. Going to go out there with just a changeup and curveball, but it's still your job, and I don't have to tell him this because he's so amazing and it's been so successful, is that those are the games where I've got to get to 21 outs, I've got to get to 24 outs, and figure it out. Get through the lineup two and a half times, and give my team a chance. And that's where I think the Hall of Fame, when you look at a Jack Morris or Burt Blyleven, didn't give them the proper respect they deserve.
Right.
They pitched along according to the games. You know, that's why Jack Morris was such a phenomenal big game pitcher. He may not have had his A game in that start, but he went out there and he figured out how to get 24, 27 outs. He figured out, you know, we're winning 5-4. I gotta maintain that lead and give our team a chance. And so, you know, when people are voting on their overall statistics, they don't realize that a lot of those games, they didn't have their A game stuff, but they still found a way to get a victory for their team.
I know one of the things in, you know, one of the part-time things I'll do here is I'll teach a broadcasting class here at Penn State. And when I talk to the students, I've always told them, look, be yourself. When you're on the air, just be yourself. Over time, you've always been, as a talk show host or an analyst, you've been opinionated. How important it is, regardless of what others have said, that you've been yourself in terms of delivering those opinions and how you felt.
It goes back to my dad. I mean, my dad, like yourself, was a teacher at the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. I used to ask him as a player, you know, am I embarrassing the family? You know, and he used to always say, no, you know, there's too many vanilla, dry people out there. He said, you're a character. People are entertained by you. And, you know, always, like you said, be yourself, be honest. You don't want to shortchange yourself. You know, when you start trying to, do things according to the other people's agenda, eventually you wind up being a phony. And I think people are way too smart. I think I've been doing radio now 14 years.
Right.
And people sniff that out. They don't want to hear people that are phony, and they don't want to tell you how it is. I believe in the method the same as I'm coaching baseball. I do it on the air. It's keep it simple, stupid. You know, the KISS method. It's right. Less is more sometimes. Dan Patrick was a great mentor for me for 5.5 years, where if I'm interviewing somebody, it's a question of, listen, if he's a dry interview, it's my job to pull out the best out of that person.
Right.
I can't say that, oh, that guy was a terrible interview. No, or that girl was a terrible interview. It was my fault that I didn't pull the best out of them. You know, you have to ask more of yourself. And so for me, when I'm on the air, the one thing that my dad always taught me was my job is to get you from point A to point B, or if you're listening at work or whatever, I'm supposed to be entertaining. You know, and I think if I'm not honest with the listener, I'm not entertaining them, and essentially I'm not doing my job.
Well, you're doing extremely well, and we thank you so much for the time that you gave us today. Appreciate it very much, Rob.
Hey, anytime, give me a call. You got my number.
All right. Rob Dibble with us, former major league pitcher for many years with the Cincinnati Reds. Of course, we've had him on, his show was on WKOK for many years. Now he's working as an analyst. He's also part-time baseball coach on top of that. So
It was great to have Rob on, and we will have Rob on again as the summer goes along because he does deliver opinions.
That's Steve's interview with Rob Dibble on Major League Baseball. Coming up, Ken Cherto, Joe Bautista, all after the news here on The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK and online at WKOK.com.
I really need a used car.
Sunbury Motors has lots full of used cars.
But it has to be a good used car.
Well, they're not good.
What?
They're great. Sunbury Motors has over 300 used vehicles to choose from. Cars, SUVs, and trucks so good, we wouldn't sell them if we wouldn't drive them. That's probably why we consistently sell over 200 cars a month. And when it comes to new, Sunbury Motors is the largest Ford dealership in the central Susquehanna Valley. Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices.
And I'm a smart shopper, and I know what the price should be for the car I want.
Well, here at Sunbury Motors, you get our lowest price promise. We research prices on used cars so much that if you find a better deal, we'll beat it. That's a promise. So here's your keys.
Thanks.
Take a test drive today at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and our Kia dealerships at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Shop 24/7 and see our inventory at sunburymotors.com. That's sunburymotors.com. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
This is the best of the Steve Jones Show Memorial Day edition. Steve will be back in the Sunbury Motors Studio again tomorrow. Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, Routes 11 to 15, with a Kia dealership in Hummel's Wharf. You can actually walk around their lots today and then be ready to pick out the car you want and go see them tomorrow or whatever day is convenient for you. Today's show sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. You can see what they can do for you online at purdyinsurance.com as well. And as I said, Steve will be back tomorrow to take your calls on the Hilshire's General Store hotline. Write this number down so you have it tomorrow from 3 to 5, 800-795-9565, 800-795-9565. You can talk about the weekend sporting events through the holiday weekend and try and take me off the Indy 500 topic for 2 hours. Actually, Steve will probably do that anyway all by himself. And here's a little tip for you. If it's your night to cook, any night coming up this week, like me, you want to cheat. Go down to Hilshire's General Store, Routes 11 to 15, just south of Sealands Grove in Port Treverton, and check out what the ladies have cooked up for the day. All homemade from scratch food items. Plus, you can grab some replacement parts for the lawnmower if you had trouble with that this weekend. And you can find just about everything you need. The modern-day general store, Hilshire's General Store, Routes 11 and 15 in Port Treverton. Now, coming up this half hour, we'll have Steve's conversation with Joe Bautista, where he alluded to the fact that the door is open for a Winter Classic at Beaver Stadium. We'll have that coming up after Steve's conversation from February when he talked with Ken Cherto about the Olympics taking out wrestling in coming years.
Let's bring in Ken Cherto, former Olympic wrestler. A passionate topic. I have had the privilege of working with Ken probably for the last 10 to 15 years on local broadcasts, and also we've done several matches together on the Big Ten Network, several dual meets along the line. Ken, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Hey there. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How did you, you heard the news, how hard did it hit you when you heard the news from the IOC?
It's super hard. I mean, it's a sickening feeling to think it's, my first thought is, no way, this can't be reality. And then as I research and look into it and get to the bottom of what's going on and decide how to fight against it, there's no way it's acceptable. My first reaction is fight this, you know, get the IOC more educated, find out what's going on, and that's what we're doing. That's what I'm doing. That's what USA Wrestling is doing. And I'm trying to lead the charges along with USA Wrestling to get everybody organized, to communicate to the IOC, you know, how special our sport is and how you know, for lack of a better word, foolish their decision is. I mean, certainly it'll be communicated a little more politely than that, but the bottom line is, you know, there's not a whole lot of research being shown publicly for why they're making such a decision.
Had there been any rumblings ahead of time that wrestling was on the endangered species list?
USA Wrestling and FILA, our international governing body, were aware that there was that the IOC wanted some changes in the rules, to tweak some things. There was discussion of cutting back some Greco weight classes. I'm not involved in international politics closely, so I don't know the exact communication between the IOC and the International Wrestling Governing Body, but there definitely was no warning that men's freestyle wrestling was an endangered species. That's, you know, a shock to the entire wrestling world and really to the Olympic community.
Great. Now, you talk about what you would like to do in a grassroots effort. So to the listeners out there, what would you like to see them do that is respectful but also to the point that can help the cause?
I want them to communicate to the International Olympic Committee and United States Olympic Committee, as well as USA Wrestling, what wrestling means to us, and to get that information to the IOC. Ultimately, it's going to be a small group of people that are making this decision, the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, and the executive board, the VIPs, 15 or so of them, have already decided to recommend to the greater IOC to cut wrestling. That's what's causing the uproar. And there's going to be a meeting in May of the entire IOC, which is more like over 100 people, and they're going to get together and have a discussion and then have a final decision in August. So we have between now and then to get our communication lines organized. This moment, there's nothing exactly that the listener can do. They can get on my webpage and read up on it. Like, I've posted a Save Olympic Wrestling page, and I've directed people to the USA Wrestling page. So they get on my webpage, which is the name, HenSherter.com. There's tons of information on there about my thoughts on it, articles that have been published, interviews. As far as what we can do this exact second, there's some petitions. I've linked it to numerous petitions we're trying to get, hundreds of thousands of people on there saying why we should keep wrestling. And there's also a kind of a funny ESPN poll, vote for which sport you would have cut if you were on the IOC. And as you can imagine, badminton, ping pong, different other sports are more popular than wrestling. So they're more popular choices to cut than wrestling. But I don't want them to cut anything, frankly.
Exactly.
Organize the games, and it's not that time-consuming that you have to start axing things. It's an arbitrary thing. I mean, certainly, if they're going to cut something, it should not be wrestling. But personally, just let it all hang out there, and let's have the add a day of the Olympics, whatever it takes. I don't know. They seem to think that they keep expanding and growing it as it goes. I'm not sure what their rationale is.
Yeah, I don't mind if wushu's added. I don't mind if karate's added, wakeboarding. I don't mind if any of that's added. Don't cut. I mean, simple as that.
Right, we're preaching to the choir here. Although I am interested in knowing what wushu is.
But you ask an interesting question. And again, I have my own theory. So again, and people have heard me say this over and over again, but I'll at least say it to you. I think that there's backroom politics with this. The backroom politics with this involves the Eastern Rim countries. The wushu happens to be the ancient Chinese martial art. Well, there are weight classes involved. You're talking about a country which has a sphere of influence now and a lot of money that wants more medals in the games. Well, how do you get more medals in the games? You add a sport where you're great and you eliminate a sport where you don't do anything.
Uh-huh. So wushu is in Chinese. See, I haven't done my research on wushu like you have, Steve. That's very impressive.
Yes, well, I considered it at one point, and I looked at it and said, no, I'm sorry. I mean, look at this body build. This is not a wushu body. this is a body made by sushi, not for wushu. So,
in all seriousness, I mean, when you look at martial arts and the expansion of the UFC and MMA,
yeah.
I mean, wrestling is the king martial art.
Yes.
Are the greatest martial artists. When it comes down to hand-to-hand combat, which wrestling is, our wrestlers are the kings in the MMA ring, and they're ruling the UFC world. So I love all the martial arts. I have great respect for, judo, karate, and any other art. I'm not familiar with this Chinese wushu stuff we're talking about. But that being said, if there's going to be a martial art that remains in the Olympics, it's got to be wrestling.
Right. 71 countries participated last time through, and the event was sold out again. I mean, that's what baffles me about this. When you have that many countries, this is not a dozen countries, and by the way, 1,000 people showed up to watch.
You know, we packed the arena. And let me clarify, in over 170 countries, world programs, and so, and then a little bit, the Olympics cut back. They cut back our weight classes by 8 years. In any case, qualifiers now. It used to be every team, every country could bring their guys. Now countries have to qualify wrestlers to get to the Olympics. It's very strict qualifying standards. So when you say there's 71 countries in the Olympics, that means 71 countries had a pretty darn good wrestler to represent them in the Olympics, or wrestlers. There's another 100 countries that are very involved in wrestling, but they can't quite keep pace with the United States and Russia and Japan and Turkey and Iran, all the other top countries. They're just not quite there yet. So there's a huge world following of wrestlers. I mean, there's over a million wrestlers in our, just in our country. You know, worldwide, I don't know what the number is. I believe it's over 10 million people are participating in wrestling worldwide. So it's very frustrating, and it's just really, like you start saying, behind closed doors, politics. And, you know, I'm not in the loop on the minutiae of those politics, although I'm very disappointed in FILA, our international governing body, for not, you know, not nipping this in the butt better. And, you know, apparently they didn't politic and discuss enough with the IOC like some of the other sports did. Like, I guess modern pentathlon has a very strong lobbying effort within the IOC, right, as I'm sure you've read.
Yes, and they did, because that was the other sport that they were considering knocking out. But give me an idea, Ken, and from your own personal experience, when did you start to have, as a wrestler, an Olympic dream? Just a dream and a thought, boy, that's what I'd like to love to be in someday in my life. When did that start for you?
1980, ninth grade, watched it, Moscow Olympics. I think, yeah, Moscow, right?
Yeah, 1980 was Moscow, yes.
Yeah, over Corbett, I believe so.
Yeah.
See, there was no American wrestler. There wasn't a whole lot of wrestling on the tube. There was no Americans. We had boycott. I'm a big Gene Mills fan, and, you know, many other guys on that team got left home by Jimmy Carter. And I was in ninth grade. It was really, really disappointing. But I knew I wanted to do that. But then, you know, as my career developed in high school, I was a senior in high school in 1984. I'd already committed to Penn State. It was the Summer Olympics. They were in L.A. It was incredible. I mean, it was just like, this is what I want to do. And I knew a lot of the men that won the gold medal in the L.A. Olympics. I'd been to wrestling camps. I grew up. I'm a mat rat. I've been wrestling around since I was 12. So I knew these guys from summer camps. I knew Bobby Weaver and the Bannock brothers and the Schultz brothers. You know, Randy Lewis, I knew these guys personally, and they won Olympics on national television, worldwide television. You know, and I was like, that's what I want to do. And, you know, I was at Penn State 2 weeks later, beginning my quest.
Well, obviously, in 2016, there'll still be Olympic wrestling. If it ends up where it's off the grid, and there's never been a sport that's been brought back, by the way, that's been off the grid.
We're going to change that, but go ahead with
right,
your question.
Right, but yeah, I'm just pointing out a fact so people understand the uphill battle.
It's a challenge.
That's all.
It's a challenge, no doubt. It's a huge uphill battle, a huge challenge, unprecedented, but we're going to accomplish it. But go ahead finish your question.
Okay, let's theorize. How concerned are you for the sport in this country? Because that has been the ultimate goal of kids who get into the sport.
I'm not very concerned. I mean, it's not good. It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing that it's happening, that they're even considering it. But wrestling is very strong in our country. It's alive and well. You know, I do clinics all across the country. I was literally in Oregon when this news went down. I did 7 different clinics over a 5-day period in Oregon. And, you know, tied into my Pac-12 TV work. I was out there at Oregon State. And there's, you know, hundreds of people showing up at these different clinics. I mean, wrestling's live and well nationwide. I do the camp tour every summer. You know, we're the core of wrestling right here in Pennsylvania. We have a rich culture of wrestling, you know, well over 500 high schools with serious wrestling programs. And then across the country, it's growing. Like, so here it's rich in culture. I wouldn't say the culture is the same everywhere else, but it's certainly growing. The youth level especially, you know, just kids are starting younger. More kids are getting involved. Now, wrestling's going strong, obviously, with Penn State. You know, we have a, you know, tradition of excellence at Penn State, and with our recent ultra success, I mean, I'm not worried about our sport. American folk-style wrestling is going to thrive. Even freestyle wrestling will keep cranking. But it's not good when there's not an Olympic sport. It definitely takes a, you know, puts a little bit of salt in the feeling about the sport. So it can't help us, but we're going to survive and thrive regardless of what happens 7 years from now.
I mean, Ken, I think a lot of people don't realize, too, I mean, how inclusive wrestling truly is. I mean, geography, even gender. I mean, it's an inclusive sport that brings with it all the disciplines that are needed for life.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, it's all inclusive worldwide, gender wide, and absolutely trains people. It's just a great pure sport. It's just a pure sport that teaches self discipline, teaches you how to set goals. There's not a really big reward in the tunnel. I mean, most wrestlers, you know, 99.9% of wrestlers get out with their life and just move on. You know, there's very, very few college coaching opportunities. There's very few UFC openings. It's a pure sport. It's what the Olympics is built upon. It's not commercialized. So, yeah, it's a sport that the Olympics needs to keep in place. Now, that being said, we as a wrestling community need to promote our sport better. I mean, we can do better. We have kids that stop doing it in high school sometimes. They get tired of doing it. There's not as much attention given to it. We coaches need to keep promoting the sport. You know, all coaches focus on the X's and O's, which is my love and my passion. But I'm engrossed promoting our sport. And I wish more coaches, not just college coaches, but right on down through high school and youth, would work harder to promote our sport, to let people know about it, to get the word out. And then this comes back to the top. And where FILA, our international governing body for freestyle and Greco wrestling, you know, they've dropped the ball. I don't want to pull fingers or what have you. And I'm going to support them and their efforts to lobby the IOC because we got to rely on this group. It really comes down to our international governing body called FILA. It stands for Federation International Lutte Association, Lutte being wrestling. We have to rely on them to present the IOC our case for why we should retain wrestling in the 2020 Olympics and beyond. So they need to step up, and they need to get it done, and USA Wrestling needs to get more engaged. USA Wrestling has some frustrations with FILA. I mean, they have good relationship frustrations. They like to see things done differently. And they, you know, it's politics. You got to be careful. But at this point, I mean, this is pretty much a testimony to FILA's, you know, lack of quality governing. And they, you know, changes need to be made, and something needs to be done to make sure that presentation goes very, very well.
Ken, my friend, it's always a pleasure. It's great to hear from you. We'll be talking more often as time goes.
Yeah, I'll keep you posted. And like you asked at the beginning of the interview, if people want to take action, get on my webpage. It spells it out. I've got like 10 hours in laying out the webpage, the different links people can go to read up on it, sign the petitions, and get engaged. That's what the wrestling community can do, is get engaged. Don't sit back and wait, but on the contrary, get educated and fight this battle.
Kenny, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. Take care.
Ken Chertow, former Olympic wrestler for the United States, Penn Stater.
Steve's interview with Ken Chertow about the Olympics and wrestling in general. We'll have more of the Memorial Day Best of Steve Jones Show coming up, sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, online at purdyinsurance.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car, picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself, and negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word, Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
It is the Memorial Day Best of Steve Jones Show. Steve will be back with us in the Sunbury Motors studio again tomorrow. Today's show is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, online at purdyinsurance.com. Steve caught up with Joe Bautista to talk Penn State hockey recently, and Joe alluded to the fact that maybe Beaver Stadium could hold a Winter Classic.
Winter Classic's going to be at Michigan. When they signed the contract with them originally and they knew the possibility of the lockout, they had put in a provision that we will come back if we don't play it. So they're going to do that. What will that do, in your opinion, for the sport, Detroit, Toronto, plus what they're going to do with Comerica?
Well, I think, you know, it's become, you know, a very special part of the NHL. And you know, it's an event. It's not a great, if you've ever been to one, I don't know if you have, but it's not a great way to watch a hockey game.
I've sort of had bowl games. Maybe I can go this time.
You know, I think that people, it's an event. You go for the event. Now, what's going to be interesting about playing it in the Big House is that the world record for a hockey game was played there between Michigan and Michigan State. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see if the NHL playing in the Big House can outdraw that college attendance, you know. But I think, again, anything that's going to do this, you know, it's the only unfortunate thing for us, the only negative we've had with hockey as a sport was the fact that they had the lockout. Everything else for Penn State has been terrific. The energy, the excitement, and in some funny ways, maybe the NHL kind of being on in a lockout situation actually did focus more spotlight on college hockey. There's college hockey now on five different networks. Yeah. 5 years ago, that didn't exist.
Right.
And the Big Ten Network's going to obviously be showing an awful lot of hockey, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Phone number, tickets, website tickets.
1-800-NINNY. Go PSU Sports. Can go right to either the hockey sites. And don't forget that in November, on November 3rd, we will be bringing in it's the Musselman's family skating tribute, and it's going to be a big event, and it's going to be televised on NBC, tape delayed, but it will be televised over the Thanksgiving holiday, and we won this, by the way, over Seattle and Phoenix. So it's a big deal, and I hope that, you know, we wanted to announce it now, just to make sure people put it on their calendar, because that's a football weekend. It's the Illinois weekend. Yeah. And hopefully our football fans will say, hey, well, maybe I'll just stick around till Sunday and get a chance to watch all these former Olympians, world champions. And it's a family show, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Well, I know you wedged out some time for us. We appreciate it very much.
You bet.
Right, go give a tour.
Okay.
That's Joe Bautista. All right. And great having him on. Made some news there. Made some news. When it comes to an outdoor game and the possibility of Beaver Stadium, which has been held out there, Joe Bautista said, look, it's not a question of whether it's going to happen. He feels down the road it's going to happen. Now, whether it's the Winter Classic or not remains to be seen, but he's talking about the possibility. And again, it's still just a possibility. This is not etched in stone. Of playing a regular season game against a high-profile team in Beaver Stadium right after the regular season is over with in Beaver Stadium. That way you don't have to shut the stadium down and winterize the stadium. Now, when that happens, a year from now, 2 years, three, four, 5 years from now, we'll see. But he certainly sounded rather definitive about the possibility of the stadium being used for that purpose down the road. It does take a lot to get the stadium back and rolling again if it is shut down and winterized. And it's one thing to get it rolling again in April where, you know, the weather's warmer, pipes are warmer, things like that, because just turning the water on is a big deal. But you also do have to work out the parking part of it. And if they were to do something extensive in Beaver Stadium, as you know, in the past, the Minnesota game, from a couple of years ago, the Michigan game in 1995, when they had to shuttle in people from various parking lots and satellite lots around the area, it can be done. It has worked before at Beaver Stadium. But now but I just thought it was interesting. I thought that was the news out of that interview. The news out of that interview was that part where he talked about that. We know Pegula's on track. The seats are in. The concrete's poured. They're working on the concourse and the exterior's all done. But it was that part there where he talked about the outdoor possibility, because the NHL is going to have six outdoor games in the upcoming season, including the Winter Classic at the Big House at Michigan Stadium.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the Memorial Day Best of Steve Jones show today. We heard from John Schaefer, the Iron Pigs, Merrill Reese of the Philadelphia Eagles Radio Network, Rob Dibble on Major League Baseball, Ken Cherto about the Olympics, and Joe Bautista talking about maybe a Winter Classic coming to Beaver Stadium. If you missed any of the program, you can check out the podcast at stevejonesshow.com. Today's show is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, online at purdyinsurance.com. Steve back in the Sunbury Motors studio tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK and online at wkok.com.